There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Daily Tech News Show is made possible by its listeners. Thanks to all of you, including Pepper Geesey, Eric Holm, and Carmine Bailey. Coming up on DTNS, can an AI diagnose Alzheimer's disease? Dr. Nikki helps us understand what's true and what isn't about a new study. Plus, pop-up ads may be coming to streaming. And do we really want new cell phone designs? This is the Daily Tech News for Friday, June 24th, 2022 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
Also from Los Angeles, I'm Lamar Wilson.
I'm coming at you from New York City, Dr. Nikki Ackermans. It's me.
And hoping for a cooler weekend, I'm the show's producer, Roger Chang.
From your lips to God's ears, Roger. We have got a good show for you today, so let's start with a few tech things you should know. Next month, Microsoft will start notifying Windows 8.1 users, I mean, I use the plural optimistically, that the OS will reach its end of support date on January 10th, 2023. That means it'll stop receiving security updates. It already stopped receiving regular updates. After January 10th, 2023, y'all are on your own. No more security updates from Microsoft. Microsoft does not even plan to offer extended security updates for that particular version of the OS, although it had done that for Windows 7.
Leave my mom alone. According to an investor note from Apple analyst Ming-Chi Kuo, as seen by 9 to 5 Mac, Apple will likely announce its mixed reality headset in January of 2023. The note also predicts Meta may pull back on near-term VR hardware investments to refocus on the core advertising business model.
The Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency and the U.S. Coast Guard published a joint alert warning that organizations are still seeing active exploitation of unpatched VMware Horizon and Unified Access Gateway servers that have the Log4 shell vulnerability. The alert warned that state-sponsored groups are exploiting these flaws and that it's seen organizations compromised by multiple threat actor groups. So get it fixed, y'all.
Twitter announced that its button to toggle captions for its video player is now available on the public to the public on iOS and Android. The button is in the top right corner of the video, and if it has captions available, lets you choose whether you want to see written descriptions. The company has started a limited test of this feature in April.
Walmart announced Thursday it's developed a way to switch seamlessly between cloud providers and its own servers, so hybrid cloud, which potentially could save the company millions of dollars and offer options other organizations looking to reduce their dependence on giant technology companies might want to look into and copy. Walmart's new hybrid system uses third-party platforms from Microsoft, Google, and its own internal server network, which it built out across Walmart facilities around the country. All right, let's talk about nothing. The phone. Let's not start an Abbott and Costello routine, right? Not this time. Nothing opened pre-order reservation deposits. They just call it pre-order reservations, but they charge you. This is for the Phone 1, the Nothing Phone 1 device. If you get an invite code, so you can't just do it. You need to get invited. Then you can put down £20, a non-refundable deposit that will be applied to the purchase price if you follow through on the order. Everyone else goes on a wait list, and then new invites for you to be allowed to give them your £20 deposit will go out in batches. The Phone 1 will open for all pre-orders on July 12th. That may sound convoluted to some of you, but it's actually a system that Nothing founder Carl Pei's former company OnePlus used for years to help manage supply and drum up interest. Another way to drum up interest is to have Pei sit down with Engadget and throw shade on the rest of the cell phone industry. What happened there, Lamar?
Yeah, so Pei, like a lot of us folks, feel that phones are just aren't as special as they used to be. I kind of share this. But unlike most of us, he thinks he knows what the problem is. So there are fewer companies making flagship phones these days. We know that. And they all work in the same parts from Qualcomm, Sony, and Samsung, and pretty much the same consumer research data. Boring, 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 right? So they all end up making very similar phones. Or as Pei puts it, if the input is the same and the method is the same, the output is more or less the same as well.
It kind of makes sense. I agree with them here. It's like, yeah, they're all working from the same playbook, so it's no surprise that the phones kind of look the same. Pei says they intentionally used intuition at nothing when designing the Phone 1, leading to design elements like the transparent case, making the heat pump at the bottom of the phone look like a tiny little elephant. And the signature feature of the Phone 1 is the 900 LEDs on the back. I think that number is accurate. There are 900 LEDs on the back. Those are used as a notification system that can do things like a red light to indicate that video is being recorded, patterns and colors that you can assign to contacts along with sounds, so you don't have to look at the screen to see who's calling. You're like, oh, it's flashing green and playing Marvin Gaye. Must be Lamar. Lights glow differently when it is charging versus reverse charging, and LEDs by the charging port indicate how much power is left in the battery at a glance. Okay, so those are different, but do we need our phones to be different? Dr. Nikki, I'm curious, as a phone user yourself, like all of us, do you feel like, oh, these phones are boring, I wish they were cool again?
Yeah, I want a cool phone. I want a little elephant on my phone. Well, we don't know what we're missing until it comes out, right? So I encourage trying new stuff. Some of it will probably flop, but that's fine. I like the LEDs on the back. I wonder if they can be used as a ring light. I feel like that's something that so many people are using right now. Ooh. Not me right now, but some people. Yeah, innovation's always good. Mostly always good.
I'm going to play the curmudgeon here, Lamar. What about you?
Okay. So I'm kind of with her. I like the idea of changing it around. Like I have the "if it's not broke, don't fix it" model, but phones, I used to do technology videos on phones. They're you know, when they were exciting, when Android was out, they're boring now. It's just so many of them coming out. There's nothing interesting about them. We need a way to spice up these so I can make another channel and get famous again. So it's really important that we follow through on this, people.
I disagree. I think phones, we got them to a point where they work well. And if you try too much stuff, you're just going to make them not work as well, and they're not going to be as compelling. I don't disagree with what Carl Pei is doing. I think somebody needs to try stuff. So I'm with you all to a certain extent, which is I'm glad somebody's trying some things, because maybe most of them won't work, but some of them will. And then we'll learn and get some new innovation. I'm cool with that. I'm not bothered by phones being, you know, uninteresting. That just means it's a mature product category. I'm also, you know, not bothered that the laundry device I buy is uninteresting and not doesn't have cool new features. In fact, when they try to put too many cool new features in a laundry machine, it makes it confusing. Laptops, same way. They work a certain way, and that's good. You want them to be predictable devices. They're commodity devices now.
Okay, that laundry thing was very old man right there. I'm sorry.
Old man talk is coming out.
The idea, if I get one machine, I know they exist, by the way, that you can put laundry in, it washes and dries, and that's what everybody has, because I know it's really expensive right now. That's the innovation I want to see, the progress. Something can be done better than this. I know what you're...
That's a new product category, though. I'm talking about when they're like, we put all these special alert ringtones on your... I'm like, I don't need that. I just need it to wash well. Does it wash well? That's what I want.
Filtered out through time. The bad stuff will fall by the wayside, just like how 80s music is great. All the bad stuff, we don't listen to it anymore. And
thank you. I like you.
Holograms. All right. Innovation.
Yeah, I agree, and that's why I said I'm glad somebody's doing it. I'm glad I'm not doing it.
I don't have to worry about the stuff that fails.
I guess what I'm saying is I'm glad nothing is trying things out, because somebody does need to do that. But I don't fault Samsung and Apple and Google for coming up with phones that work well, you know, without you know, without trying a bunch of new things and putting it out there. And we're like, oh, that was an interesting idea, but I hate it. You know, you need to, there's a point in a product cycle where you just realize that this is how it works. And when the iPhone first came out, it was an innovation on top of Trios and Blackberries that said, maybe you can do it without a keyboard. And I'm glad they did that. And then we iterated on that for several generations, finding out, okay, once you have a touchscreen, what else can you do? And that was exciting. But there's a certain point where it just works. And you're like, okay, this is what you can do with a touchscreen. Now, if you come up with a new form factor or the equivalent of, you know, the dryer and the laundry together in one thing, then I'm interested again. But if all you're doing is putting LEDs on the back, I'm glad somebody's doing that. But I don't really think everybody has to do that.
I get your point. There was a lot of pushback from the, because Trio was my favorite phone, was pushback from that to you know, it took a while to get people used to the typing on a screen. So I think people have to, you know, be open minded with these with these type of advances. I think that's what makes it exciting again. Yeah.
There's nothing mind blowing coming out right now, but maybe they can build on it.
I guess all I'm saying is, in older product lines like phones have become, it doesn't have to be mind blowing all the time.
I do want a hologram though, so they should work on that.
Yeah,
thank you. See, I said that pre-show. Yeah, that's what I want too.
All right. A big thanks to PJC Reese for submitting this on our subreddit and bringing it to our attention at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. Scientists at Imperial College London published a paper in Nature Portfolio Journal Communications Medicine describing a machine learning algorithm they developed to aid diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease. The team adapted an algorithm that had been developed to classify cancer tumors, but instead trained it on archived MRI scans from more than 400 patients who had either early or late stage Alzheimer's disease and a control group of patients with other neurological conditions like Parkinson's or frontotemporal dementia. They divided the brain into 115 regions and assessed each region for structural features like size, shape, texture, etc. There were like 660 categories. The algorithm was trained to identify when changes to these features predicted the existence of Alzheimer's disease, and in their paper, they said it accurately detected Alzheimer's disease in 98% of the cases they tried and could distinguish early and late stage in 79% of cases. So this sounds very promising. Dr. Nikki, what do you think?
All right. I'm excited about this one. This is like smack dab in the middle of my field. So I'll start by saying any advances in Alzheimer's disease research are big advances because we don't have a lot to go on because the problem is that we can't diagnose it in living people. So this is a step towards that. It's not like, of course, the title of the news says that a single MRI scan can detect Alzheimer's. Not exactly right now in living patients, especially with what they're doing. Okay, so I'm going to break it down. They trained an AI to look at archived MRI images, so images that were already made on people a while ago, likely on experimental MRI machines. So they're much higher definition than the one that you would usually get scanned on, and they're much more expensive, which is why they're not as widespread. And they compared the Alzheimer's and other brains to healthy brains, right? So AI is good at looking at patterns and saying, this is this pattern, and assigning images. And that's why they did that, which is really cool. Another way that the way that they were able to tell the AI or the machine learning system, I know we're not really supposed to say AI on here, what pattern they're using. So they looked at three things: cognitive scale, which is basically behavioral changes and things that you'll associate with Alzheimer's disease. This is linked to each MRI image. Then differences in brain textures and brain sort of shape on the MRI images. And also something called biomarkers in the cerebrospinal fluid. This is basically a way to track through specific proteins whether this disease is present or not using this liquid that your brain floats in. It's not really 100% accurate though. So yeah, so this is where my sort of limitations come in on this, right? This is cool, but tracking the biomarkers in your cerebrospinal fluid, not clinically used to diagnose Alzheimer's because you can't be 100% sure. So it's like a helper data. And
is that because you really can't 100% confirm someone had Alzheimer's until after they're dead and look at the brain, right?
Yeah, thanks for bringing that back up.
Okay.
Right now, the only way to 100% confirm that you had Alzheimer's or similar diseases is by looking, dissecting the brain, which is why we're bad at telling if people have Alzheimer's, because you can't do it while they're alive really well. So they had to have that data to sort of confirm the data in this study. So this is why it's not really completely doable on live people, also because of the different MRI machines and because, there's things to, like, you need to work on improving MRI technology and biomarker technology to apply, like, to be able to sit down at the hospital, get an MRI and be like, you have Alzheimer's.
Because I think that's what everybody wants, right? They're like, great, scan me now.
This is not that.
and that's because this may not be quite as accurate because, you know, it's based on archived scans. It's not based on accurate scans.
Yeah, so they took these scans and analyzed the data and applied the machine learning to that. And that took them years. It's not like you sit down and there's a software.
Right.
But they're working towards that, which is the exciting part. And this is really cool because this is exactly what I'm working on. So I'm trying to help move this needle forward as well, but I do it on sheep because it's easier to work with dead sheep than dead humans, basically. Also, the other thing that I'm not so sure about is the like brain regions that they worked on. They said that they looked at different brain regions and the brain texture. I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
But I, okay. Yeah.
So more detail would be needed. Yeah.
Yeah. And things like cortical thickness, so the thickness of the brain section, that's only visible in really, really late Alzheimer's disease, which you can already see in the MRI with the naked eye anyway. Mm-hmm. So it's like, yeah, we're getting there, but we're not there. So I'm glad I was able to break this down because the title is a little bit misleading, as usual.
Some of that would come out in the wash because of the way machine learning works, which is like, I don't know, we pointed at a bunch of stuff and it got really good at predicting. We don't even know what parts it was looking at, what parts were important and what parts weren't. Machine learning, a little bit of a black box that way. So if it was able to get really good at predicting, I'd say like, well, it could at least be used as an aid to diagnosis, but
indicator.
That's where the other thing came in, where you're like, yeah, but these scans are not the MRI that you could use every day. Is that right?
Yeah, and they can build on that. So some of the samples were from a usual MRI. So this is basically like pushing the needle towards being able to do it on live people. Like the fact that this algorithm exists, but the other science needs to catch up to the algorithm, basically, to be able to match all that.
Would this combined with the standard MRI that you would use to try to diagnose someone now, would the two combined give you, in its current form, like a better whole picture of what's going on? Or is this still too early to...
If you had really late Alzheimer's, yeah. But then you would already know that you had really late Alzheimer's because you'd be showing behavioral signs. Yeah, so the early Alzheimer's is really the tough one. And it's still tough. It's just
So the upshot here is great study, good news, but as with most published studies, there needs to be more work for it to become a practical thing that most of us can benefit from.
Yeah, story of my life.
Yeah. Yeah. I've gotten really practiced at saying that myself on the show. But this is great news, right? It does look optimistic that we can build on it, right?
Someday.
Yeah. Just needs to have more people like yourself contributing to the data pool.
Yeah, fund my Patreon. No, I don't have a Patreon.
Fund your research directly.
Yeah.
Join in the conversation in our Discord. Can you fund scientific research? Let us know. We know who to put you in touch with. Or if you just have thoughts or questions about this, you can join our Discord by linking to a Patreon account at patreon.com/DTNS.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
So we've heard, Tom, that Netflix is considering an ad-supported tier. A lot of sources say this is happening. But now we have the official word from the Netflix co-CEO, Ted Sarandos.
Yeah, indeed. Cannes Lion at Lyon? Is it because it's in French? I don't know. Cannes Lions Advertising Festival. Sarandos not only confirmed the plans are going ahead, but explained why Netflix has changed its mind because it used to be against implementing ads. Sarandos said, "We've left a big customer segment off the table, which is people who say, hey, Netflix is too expensive for me and I don't mind advertising." He also added, "We're not adding ads to Netflix as you know it today. We're adding an ad tier for folks who say, hey, I want a lower price and I'll watch ads." I think he's trying to calm down people who are like, oh, so you're going to put ads in my tier. No, if you have Netflix today, that you're not getting ads. This will be a new offering. He would not clarify what partners Netflix is talking to implement the ads. Apparently, Google and NBC Universal are the rumors. Sarandos only said, we're talking to all of them right now. So he's not letting on who they prefer. Sarandos explained that they want a, quote, pretty easy entry to the market, but that, quote, "What we do at first will not be representative of what the product will be ultimately. I want our product to be better than TV." He added that the company wants to build an ad experience that is, quote, "more integrated and less interruptive."
Now, that's interesting. So Variety had an observation that might shed light on the kind of thing that Netflix would do. Now, Fox News' subscription service called Fox Nation has been running banner ads from Camping World on the bottom third of its screen during episodes of Duck Dynasty. I mean, that kind of makes sense. And the service plans to continue promotional billboards, as they call them, to use these rather than interrupting a show with the traditional 30-second ad spots. So I know a lot of folks here don't like the idea of ads interrupting a show, but what if the ads didn't interrupt but just pop up at the bottom? How do you think we'll feel about that?
Nobody likes ads. I don't know. I feel like it's nefarious, but also less annoying. But also, I still don't want ads.
Yeah, ads is one of those fraught topics because everyone claims that they hate ads and they'll never pay for them. And yet the statistics show that there are people who are lying because people do pay for services with ads.
We also hate giving away more money than we want to. So
yeah. So when the rubber hits the road, people do end up supporting these services and subscribing to these services. So we know it's not you, but somebody out there is doing it. I do think it's compelling to say we are not going to interrupt the show, especially because Netflix content particularly is not built for ad breaks. There are no natural ad breaks in a Netflix show, so it'd be kind of hard for them to reverse engineer that. But a pop-up, so they could do pre-rolls and post-rolls, obviously, but a pop-up that just shows up in the lower third, that would not interrupt the flow of the show. It would cover some part of the show, but usually the lower third is left with, you know, less essential information when you're filming stuff. You keep the central information towards the center, which is why lower thirds are where you put graphics in most TV content. So I see that it solves that problem, But it also could potentially introduce other problems of, oh, but there was important information down there, or it's distracting and I don't like it, you know, or it's irrelevant. That's usually the problem with ads. We love ads when we don't think they're ads because we want the information. We hate ads when they're irrelevant to us.
Mm-hmm. So this is kind of interesting because initially, I know someone said in the chat that doesn't YouTube already do this? And yes, YouTube does have a banner that pops on top. Now, when I talked to you about this pre-show, I was under the assumption this would somehow like raise the screen up a little bit and pop underneath, kind of like, what is it called, science, a little things that run like under a banner row that like on news stations.
Yeah.
Like it's right under the main the scroll. Something like that where it's not interrupting at all, but if it's not
ticker
going to, it will have to kind of letterbox your content a little bit to pop up in order to do that. And I'm thinking is that a disruption people would tolerate, or would they tolerate a YouTube like banner jumping over on top of the content?
Yeah, I'll be honest. What they're describing here from Fox is the banner that pops up on the bottom and then goes away. It doesn't squeeze back the content. At least I don't think it does.
It doesn't squeeze it. Yeah. Okay.
But Netflix might do something that's more like you're saying, because a lot of times on sports now, especially sports that don't have as many timeouts like soccer, they'll squeeze back the picture and put an ad to the side.
Yes.
So I wonder if Netflix wants to do something like that. Maybe that's why he's like, well, we're not going to, you know, have the exact product at the very beginning, but eventually we'll get there. Like, they may be looking at that kind of technology as well.
I wonder if that's going to interrupt subtitles too for people who use that.
Oh, interesting.
Usually with the squeeze backs and stuff, it doesn't.
Squeeze back might be.
But with
the
lower third, like, I know a lot of times those lower thirds can push the captions up to the center of the screen, which can be annoying. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if that's how it works on the Fox Nation app or not. That's a good question, though.
Yeah, I mean, it seems preferable to just being cut off and interrupted if you had to choose.
Yeah. And it, like I said, it solves that Netflix problem of they don't have ad breaks. So how are they going to put ads around their initial shows? I'm gonna guess they will do all of these things. They're gonna have pre-roll, they're gonna have post-roll, they're gonna have banner pop-ups, they're gonna have the crawl like Lamar was talking about, like they're gonna have the squeeze back eventually, maybe not right at launch, but eventually.
You'd be surprised to see how many people would go for that versus and save $5 a month.
Why not?
They'll never admit it in our chat room.
But no. Exactly.
We're all going to be doing it. We won't tell anyone.
Hey, folks, you want to make your next vacation all about space? Well, Chris Christensen just might have the answer.
This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler with another Tech in Travel Minute. Again, I've got a place for you today, and that is Huntsville, Alabama. If you haven't thought about going to Huntsville, then you probably don't know anything about it, because it's a great place for people who like technology, because it's the home of both the U.S. Space and Rocket Center, as well as the Marshall Space Flight Center. So if you want to stand under with the last remaining Saturn V rockets and talk to one of the docents who probably worked on that rocket, or stand on the test center where they tested the engines for the Saturn V rocket high above the Marshall Space Flight Center, then that is a really cool place to go. It's also the home of Space Camp and has more PhDs per capita than any other city in the U.S. Huntsville, Alabama is worth a look. This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler.
I actually, my uncle lived in Alabama, and when we visited him when I was a kid, like I was about 12 years old, we went to the Huntsville Space Center, and the Saturn V rocket was just as impressive back then as I imagine it is now. Probably even more so, because it's even older. It's tall.
I definitely want to go see one of those one day. I've never gone to Houston or any of those places to see.
I grew up near Cape Canaveral, so.
Oh, nice.
We got the big guys.
Wait, does Houston have one? I'd just embarrass myself if it doesn't. Do they have a space center? Please tell me.
The Johnson Space Center is in Houston. It's right outside Houston in Johnson City, and you can go visit there. That's where the shuttle simulator is and stuff like that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I was going to say, we have a problem then. Okay.
I always heard that Los Alamos had the most PhDs per capita because of the nuclear program. But
oh, really? Yeah. I could see that. Lots of cool places to go. Thank you, Chris Christensen. All right, let's check out the mailbag. Regarding yesterday on the news from Amazon's ability to mimic a long-lost relative, the ability to train a voice assistant to have the same pattern as someone else. Tim wrote in with some thoughts. Quote, "It was exactly this feature that made it interesting, and I went immediately to wondering if had I enough audio or video recordings of my grandmother to pull this off. I lost my grandparents almost 25 years ago, and I'm only in my 40s. I didn't get the horror or revulsion at all. And his other marketing techniques would have made me skip right past this." He's talking about the marketing techniques that Justin was saying that Amazon should have done. Tim says, "I'm excited to try it, and you can bet the first several voices I'll try are people no longer with us who I miss."
I do it. I do it. I think grandma, hearing grandma's voice again, especially since we recently lost, would be, it wouldn't be weird to me.
Especially being able to make them say whatever you want.
Yes, like, yes, you can have another chocolate cake,
exactly,
honey.
Where I was going.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yes, you can have more chocolate chip cookies, Tom. Yeah.
I agree with your political views. It's fine.
You've always been right. I was
You're
wrong.
My favorite grandchild.
You know what? Yeah. I was going to say I would probably only do this for certain of my relatives, but now that you've brought that aspect up, I might do it for all of them. You're right.
Yeah. You can make them say whatever, yeah. Yes, I am wrong on everything I've ever said to you, Tom. Yes. Yes, I am.
And all kidding aside, my grandpa died in the 50s. He was born in 1882. We have reel-to-reel recordings of him that my uncle put together. And I've digitized some of those. If that was enough to make this work and I could hear my grandpa talk, who I never heard in real life, you know, say things, like we even have a few of his writings and things, that would be amazing.
Really fascinating.
For narration, wow. That's a really good
idea. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the problem is just the general uncanny valley-ness that people, the gut reaction, right? But why not try it?
Yeah, especially the more recent someone has passed, the weirder it is.
For sure.
You know? Yeah. Well, that is it for us today. Thank you, Lamar Wilson, as always, my friend. What's going on to tell folks about?
Well, I do short form entertaining video content on on everywhere. Literally, you can go to lamar.tv. If you can follow me on Twitter, I post content there. I recently talked about how Sriracha sucks. And a lot of people didn't like that. So that's why I posted it. Yes. So make sure you check that out. Lamar.tv.
Yeah, timing, Lamar. There's a Sriracha shortage. My gosh.
Oh, that's why I did it.
Yeah. Dr. Nikki, thank you for bringing the science today. What do you got going on to tell folks about?
I just generally tweet about science. I live tweeted that thread on the Alzheimer's thing on my Twitter at Ackerman's Nicole. My website's at NicoleAckermans.com, I believe. So just catch me there. And I'm also hosting the I Am SciComm Twitter account this week, talking about scientific communication, which has been really fun.
Yeah, thanks for looping me and Dr. Kiki and a bunch of others in on that. That was super fun to participate.
Bring in the experts.
Yeah. Special thanks to Sun Dayu, one of our top lifetime supporters for DTNS. Thanks for all the years of support, Sun Dayu. Appreciate you being with us. Folks, if you ride with us every day, Monday through Friday, and if we were like actually in the car with you, would you buy us a cup of coffee? Well, for one cup of coffee per month, actually less, $2.
Way
you
less.
Can't get a cup of coffee for $2 anymore. You can support the show. So if that makes sense, if you'd be like, yeah, I'd buy him a cup of coffee. Well, you don't even have to be in the car with us. We don't have to worry about any of that stuff. Just go to patreon.com/DTNS. That is also where you can get the extended show. We're going to be talking more about stuff on Good Day Internet, patreon.com/DTNS. We're live Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern, 2000 UTC. Find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live. We'll be back Monday. Talk to you then.
Bye.
This week's episodes of Daily Tech News Show were created by the following people. Host, producer, and writer Tom Merritt. Host, producer, and writer Sarah Lane. Executive producer and booker Roger Chang. Producer, writer, and host Rich Stroffolino. Video producer and Twitch producer Joe Kuntz. Technical producer Anthony Lemos. Spanish language host, writer, and producer Dan Campos. News host, writer, and producer Jen Cutter. Science correspondent Dr. Nikki Ackermans. Social media producer and moderator Zoe Detterding. Our mods, Beatmaster W. Scott S1, BioCow, Captain Kipper, Gadget Virtuoso, Steve Gautarama, Paul Reese, Matthew J. Stevens, and J.D. Galloway. Mod and video hosting by Dan Christensen. Video feed by Sean Way. Music and art provided by Martin Bell, Dan Luters, Mustafa A., Acast, and Len Peralta. Acast ad support from Tatiana Matias. Patreon support from Dylan Harari. Contributors for this week's show included Shannon Morse, Scott Johnson, Justin Robert Young, Lamar Wilson, and Chris Christensen. And thanks to all our patrons who make the show possible.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Transitioning to a decarbonized economy sounds like just one change. In fact, this shift requires several transitions across sectors, geographies, and timelines. In Talking Transitions, a new podcast brought to you by the EY organization and Foresight Climate and Energy, we look at how the transition is affecting three key areas: energy, financial services, and government. The Talking Transitions podcast is out now. Download today from wherever you get your podcasts, or visit talkingtransitions.com to find out more.